We'll call the Health and Human Services Finance Division together for Monday, April 13th. We did have a few bills that got pulled off the agenda over the weekend, so we have 9 bills to get through. Hopefully, we can get through those in the morning. If we can't, and we have to reconvene in the evening, it's possible we may add 1 or 2 additional bills just to try to manage workload. But if we can get through these 9 bills in the morning, we'll probably just roll with that and not have to get together this evening. That would be probably welcome to everyone, myself included. So getting started with the bills, first on the agenda is Senate File 383. Senator Jensen, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 383 deals with optometrists and the board updating their and modifying their board statutes. This is something that's been being worked on since a program rollout 5 years ago, so there's been a lot of time and attention paid to this. They've mirrored the language in here after the Medical Practice Act, which was a suggestion of the Attorney General. We've been to the Health Policy Committee, the Judiciary Committee, State and Local Committee, and now we're here in front of you. And mainly because they had not updated their fees since
1984.
Right. And Senator Jensen, the fees are in the governor's budget, correct? And we've already got that before the committee, so we expect that to go into the budget bill. It's in Senate File 825, correct?
That's correct.
And so we have an oral amendment, actually, to take those fees out of this bill, is my understanding?
That's what we would like to do, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Kavanaugh, maybe you could help us with the manner in which we would approach that.
Mr. Chair and members, it would be to delete Section 7.
Senator Sharon moves to delete Section 7. Any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. And then with the deletion of Section 7, the only thing remaining is policy that has been thoroughly vetted this year and over the last 5 years of work toward this goal, correct?
That's correct.
So with that, I think that we could entertain a motion that Senate File 383 be recommended to pass, and it'll go to finance. Senator Sharon moves that?
Yes.
Yep.
As
okay.
amended.
As amended, recommended to pass, and this would refer it to finance, and we'll go through finance, and it'll go to the floor from there with no cost. Any questions on that amendment? Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to offer testimony either in support or opposition to Senate File 383? Seeing none. On Senator Sharon's motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee.
Senator Pappas. Senate File 1274. Welcome to the committee.
And Mr. Chairman, maybe we could just get a photographer in with the baby behind me. You know how I like babies. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for hearing this bill today. Senate File 1274 is the bill to ratify the contract for PCAs and others in self-directed programs. The workers addressed by this contract are the people we entrust to support our loved ones so they can continue to live in their homes. With this contract, we have a chance to improve the lives of tens of thousands of Minnesotans, both workers and the clients. This union is voluntary, with only those who opt in paying dues. But this contract will benefit all 27,000 home care workers in self-directed programs, improving the quality of life for countless families in our state. The contract will address major issues facing home care workers and will help to stabilize the field. Key provisions of the contract include going from 0 days of paid time off to 5 days for a full-time worker, lifting the wage floor from $9 to $11 per hour, starting a training fund to improve worker skills, and requiring new worker orientation, including information on how to help to detect and prevent fraud. A vast majority of the funding for this contract goes toward the paid time off, which was identified as a crucial component for improving the industry by those providing care. You don't really want sick people taking care of these vulnerable adults. It's important that we address the funding for this contract through the rate increase and the money for the training fund, or we'll not be able to provide the provisions I just described to begin stabilizing the field so you don't have so much turnover in the field. One cannot happen without the other. That's why it's important that both funding and the negotiated provisions are in the same bill. Home care workers and their clients have been fighting for years to improve their industry, and this contract negotiated with the state and democratically voted on by the workers represents the fruit of their labor. With the improvements for workers that will come out of this contract, families who receive care will see increased stability, less turnover, a problem that plagues this industry, as I mentioned. This is a statewide issue that touches thousands of families in every corner of Minnesota. With the coming wave of baby boomers who will need care, many of whom will want to stay in their homes, we can't wait any longer to address this important issue. Home care workers and the clients they serve deserve the stability that this contract will provide. I ask for your support on Senate File 1274. Thank you.
Senator Pappas, Senate File 1274 in and of itself doesn't have a fiscal note before us, but all of those provisions that you mentioned are carried in Senate File 825, the governor's budget bill. And so putting these two together, I kind of heard you say this makes sense, because if we try to do this ratification on its own without already having the budget piece, separating them in that manner just really doesn't work technically.
We're
so we're
going
to add this to the table so that we can put it all in the same bill and either and do it all or not. I mean, I think probably do it all. So any questions of members? Senator Fischbach?
Mr. Chair, I'm just curious if we have any of the supporting. I understand you just said it's in the other bill, but I don't think we have that in front of us. We have none of the other information.
So the fiscal note to Senate File 825 carries all of that cost. I mean, this, we can say we ratify a contract, but without doing the appropriations, it doesn't actually work. And that's why, in order to align the policy and the budget, we need this sentence on our table as well. And so we did hear the costs of the budget pieces that align with actually ratifying the contract. And so we need to get this sentence before us too laying on the table so that we can put the whole package together.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, just a reminder, Senator Fischbach, the cost is $16 million.
Yes.
And Mr. Chair, I understand the need to, but that was what I was wondering, because I don't remember everything from the governor's budget. I'll admit it. I don't remember every number that we went over. So
we can have it forwarded again just to highlight it if people want the fiscal. If you want, we can.
Also, Mr. Chairman, I do.
Senator Pappas.
I do have a summary of the tentative agreement that wasn't copied for the members, but I can get that to the members or Senator Fischbach or whoever would like it.
Why don't you do that? That'd be helpful.
Mr. Chair, I would appreciate that because we have nothing but one sentence.
Right. Any other questions of members?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
I'm sorry, I came in late. Senator Pappas, did you happen to talk about the dues, how they're set, the conversation basically that we had out in the hallway? Did you have a chance to
No, Mr.
That?
Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
No, I anticipated there would be a question about it. But the dues are set by the members. So as soon as the contract is ratified and the money is appropriated and the members know how much they're going to be making, then they will set the dues themselves.
Any other questions of members?
I have one testifier with me, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if you're taking testimony.
If you wish.
But she could briefly, Summer Spica. Yes. Summer Spica.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Good morning, Senator, members of the committee. My name is Summer Spica, and I am a home care worker from St. Paul. I am part of the Home Care Workers Union with SEIU and a member of the Union Executive Board. I was also on the bargaining team for the first contract we recently reached a tentative agreement on with the state. This contract, and in particular the paid time off, is incredibly important to me for many reasons. The sad truth is that I have spoken before numerous committees, and each time I think beforehand about which of the multiple stories I have experienced that I should share. Should I talk about when I had to go back to work days after having a C-section? which has happened to me twice. Or should I share my story about when my newborn baby girl was too young for vaccinations, got whooping cough this winter, and had to spend a whole month straight, including over Christmas, in the pediatric intensive care unit, forcing me to miss work to be there with her? Or should I talk about other health issues that have faced my family and the challenges of deciding between working for a paycheck my family needs or taking care of health issues that face myself, my husband, or my kids? Like thousands of home care workers in our state, these stories aren't hypothetical or a random occurrence. They are a fact of life. This isn't right. The 5 days of PTO wouldn't have solved all our problems, but it would have made a huge difference. Luckily, we have a strong and supportive network of family and friends, but our work deserves to have basic protections like paid time off. In addition to the PTO, an increase in pay and training for home care workers will be an important step towards stabilizing our workforce, a crucial component to good care, and will improve the lives of thousands of seniors and people with disabilities from every corner of our state. I ask that you please support the funding and ratification of our home care contract. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions of members? Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to offer testimony either in support or opposition to Senate File 1274? Seeing none, Senator Rosen moves Senate File 1274 be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the HHS omnibus bill. On that motion, any further questions? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Pappas. Next, Senator Carlson, if you wouldn't mind, Senator Eakin has let us know he has to get to another committee. Do you mind if he goes next? So next we're going to pull up Senator Eakin, Senate File 796. Senator Eakin, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you, Senator Carlson, for letting me put you in front of you here. Senate File 796 deals with the Safe Place for Newborns law, which is already in effect. The problem is that a lot of people are not aware of it, and that's what this bill is designed to address. Actually, the law was passed back in 2000, and it was strengthened in 2012. Human Services Commissioner Lucinda Jensen once said that with this bill, if we can save even one child through this, it will be well worth it. And this bill is, again, it strengthens a law which is designed to save unborn children, save children who are born to mothers who are distraught, frightened, in a situation where they don't know what to do, and it's resulted in some tragic situations where the child has been abandoned. And this is designed to provide a safe place for that child to be brought, and it's safe and it's anonymous for the mother who contacts the folks that would provide that child with a safe place to be dropped off. And that would include a hospital, an urgent care facility, or an ambulance responding to a 911 call. The bill does not have an actual appropriation in it. There is a fiscal note that has been drawn up for $350,000, so I think that we should probably put that into the bill if I could make a
Senator Eakin moves on line 1.5 to replace the blank appropriation with $350,000. On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And this, again, with this bill, we hope to get the word out, and the fiscal note makes it clear what this money would be spent on, and it would include advertising, public service advertising, such as the use of billboards, indoor advertising, expansion into mediums such as radio, cultural community media, additional digital online outreach efforts, and outreach to providers and conferences and newsletters. So that's the way that they would get this message out. I think it's important to note that this is a program really of last resort. It's not designed to encourage this type of behavior. Actually, I think it does the exact opposite. I think it would help to encourage parents also to engage in discussions with their young daughters to prevent situations like this from occurring in the first place. A lot of people are not aware that tragic situations like this do occur, and by getting that word out, I think that hopefully it would lead to more preventive efforts that would prevent this from happening in the first place. But for those young mothers who find themselves in this terrifying situation, at least this option would be available, and we want people to know about that. I do have with me today Andrea Rao from the MCCL, who would also like to testify to the bill.
Ms. Rao, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Andrea Rao, and I'm representing MCCL, Minnesota Citizens Concerned for Life. And I thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of Senate File 796. As stated on the Department of Human Services information sheet that I think you may have in your packets, on one side there's a poster, and on the reverse side some information on the program. But the Safe Place for Newborns law provides safe and anonymous alternative places for mothers to leave their newborn children. Enacted in 2000 and amended in 2012, the law allows a mother or a person who has her permission to anonymously leave her newborn at a safe place, including hospitals, healthcare facilities that provide urgent care medical services, or an ambulance that is dispatched in response to a 911 call without fear of prosecution. Additional requirements include that the infant be no more than 7 days old and unharmed at the time of relinquishment. This law is not intended to be an alternative to a standard adoption placement, but rather for those rare and heartbreaking circumstances where the mother either did not know or was unable to cope with the pregnancy or plan for the birth of her child. If she was aware of the pregnancy, she likely never sought care and hid it from everyone that she knew. Sadly, the infants born under these circumstances are those most at risk of being abandoned, harmed, or killed in the moments and days after birth. This law is intended to protect those babies by providing the mother with a safe and anonymous alternative. Back in 2000, when this first became law in Minnesota, it was to great fanfare. The media devoted a significant amount of time to the issue, which helped to raise awareness of the new law. Additionally, a nonprofit organization was created with the goal of raising funds to continue to educate Minnesotans about the law. This organization created a website and had a toll-free phone number. But 15 years later, this law is now old news, and the nonprofit organization has long since disbanded. And most significantly, a new generation of women who may be in need are mostly unaware of the existence of Minnesota's Safe Place for Newborns law. And that is where this legislation fits in. Senate File 796 seeks an appropriation from the Department of Human Services simply to increase awareness of this law. DHS has worked with the counties in the past in efforts to raise awareness. They also have information on their website and created the poster, which I showed earlier. And as Senator Eakin said, we hope that the Department of Human Services can provide this information to the public at large and to those that may be most in need of being aware of this information. There's a lot of more detailed plan in the fiscal note. We hope that it would include sharing information with the schools and the community at large. And I thank you for the opportunity to explain this legislation, and I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rao. Is there any questions of members? Senator Rosen.
Just to clarify, Mr. Chair and Senator Eakin, it does include fire halls, fire departments, fire stations.
Senator Eakin?
Mr. Chair and Senator Rosen, it includes 911 calls, which would include that as well.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions of members? Seeing none, is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to offer testimony either in support or opposition to Senate File 796? Seeing none, Senator Eakin moves Senate File 796 as amended be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the HHS omnibus bill. On that motion, any further questions of members? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Eakin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Carlson. Senate File 1517, consumer directed, community supports. welcome to the committee. Those have been sitting there for days. You can put them on. I don't know.
Chair, I just got new glasses on Friday.
How are they working? I forgot mine, and so did Senator Rosen. This is the day for different glasses.
Make them an extra pair if someone needs them.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have Senate Files 1517, Consumer-Directed Community Supports Budget Methodology Changes. The Consumer-Directed Community Support Service, or CDCS, allows individuals with disabilities to have an individualized annual budget and greater flexibility in creating their support system with oversight provided by the county and fiscal support entity. In 2004, CDCS services were expanded to all waivers, and the state took over the budget methodology. The methodology did not include an increase for individuals when they left a school environment, and therefore many of the individuals left the consumer-directed option and were forced to choose less flexible, more costly service options that did include an increase to cover employment or day supports. Consumer direction allows individuals and their families greater flexibility in creating support systems, resulting in a more cost-effective service delivery system. Consumer-directed services supports the state's Reform 2020 initiative and the Olmstead Plan. SF 1517 will correct that long-standing problem with the CDCS budget methodology. CDCS is a program that works. It allows greater flexibility and has high consumer satisfaction. By supporting this bill and changing the budget methodology, we will make it more likely that adults will stay on CDCS and be able to self-direct their employment and day services, moving towards greater outcomes and increased independence. Here to testify on behalf of this bill is Eric Peterson from Lutheran Social Services, as well as Jody and Bo Carlin.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Eric Peterson. I'm a senior director at Lutheran Social Services of Minnesota. I'm here to ask for your support of a bill that will allow people with disabilities to have more control over their services and more opportunities for employment, all of which is done in a more cost-effective manner. This bill will correct a longstanding issue with the budget methodology we use in CDCS. The current methodology is causing most individuals to leave the program in favor of more expensive services when they turn 21. Currently, the annual budget for a person in CDCS is about 30% less than they would be eligible for in any other service. And for the most part, this works just fine. The service is less costly, and they're able to meet all of their needs. However, when they turn 21, we ask them to add day or employment supports into that same budget. And this doesn't work for most people. They're not able to meet both their needs at home and at work under that reduced budget. Therefore, they leave for more costly provider-directed services where that 30% reduction is restored to pay for the additional administrative costs. In addition to that, they can then receive their day services funding on top of that already increased budget. The result is a more costly service and less control for the individual. The solution to this is simple. It's allow people to access the additional funding for employment and day supports that they would receive in any other service option while staying in the self-directed CDCS program. And that is what passage of this bill will do. This would allow those who have left the service option in favor of more costly options to move back to CDCS where they have more control over their services at a lower cost. For people turning 21 and leaving the public school system, this option would allow them to continue to choose self-direction and avoid having to move to more costly provider-controlled services. And for the small number of adults who have stayed in CDCS by sacrificing other services, they will once again be able to meet all of their needs as they will be able to access those employment dollars in addition to their regular budget. We know that giving people more control over their services works. The average staff wage in CDCS is over $14 per hour. The annual staff turnover in CDCS is less than 1% a year. People are finding creative and cost-efficient ways of meeting their needs. By giving people more control over their employment dollars, we will drive more innovation and creativity into the system. More flexibility will allow us to break down some of the barriers that have led to 72% of people with disabilities working in segregated employment settings, which is the highest in the nation. Today, only 13% of people with disabilities are working in fully integrated settings, and we can do better. and this bill will make a better formula, and a better formula will increase independence and self-sufficiency, which will lead to better outcomes and better lives for people with disabilities. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson. I'm just listening to your testimony, and it doesn't seem to be borne out by the assumptions in the fiscal note that this would actually be at a lower cost. I mean, the fiscal note seems to state exactly the opposite, that this would just be increasing costs. Not that it wouldn't be good for recipients,
right,
but the at a lower cost piece, I mean, maybe we need to work a little bit on maybe they priced out something that you weren't really trying to accomplish. So we can maybe work on this a little bit, because it seems at odds with your testimony as I read the fiscal note.
And I can address that if you'd like, quickly.
Please.
We did meet with, when the fiscal note came out, it was higher than we had anticipated, and we did meet with DHS at the end of last week to talk about the assumptions that were driving that fiscal note. There are a couple of key assumptions that we clarified that I think will have a dramatic impact on that fiscal note. The first being, it was assumed in there that this add-on would be given to every single person eligible, given their age and given the program. And that wasn't the intention. The intention was that a person should demonstrate the need. In self-directed services, the person develops a plan that shows how they're going to use those supports. So there may be individuals, there are individuals who don't want employment supports right now, where it's not something they're seeking. They wouldn't get this additional funding. And certainly not every person would demonstrate the need for the entire amount of funding that they're eligible for. Some folks are going to choose less costly services, maybe a portion of their hours per week. Some folks may choose more of a five-day-a-week service, which would cost the full amount. But that's going to dramatically reduce that fiscal note. There's another assumption with people moving from traditional services, which are more costly, back to CDCS. People who were on CDCS before, it became less flexible, it became a program that didn't work, and they went left for more expensive services. The assumptions in there we had talked about too, and they were going to go back and look. They only have 8% of people moving over in the first year, 25% by the year four, and we believe that number would be a lot higher, therefore creating a larger offset.
Okay, we'll stay tuned and watch for a different budget view that supports the testimony. And you had, Senator Carlson, you had another testifier?
Yes, we do.
Welcome.
I think we do have, Mr. Chair, we do have the department here to verify that these assumptions are going to be changed. I'm not sure if we have we don't have a number yet, but we should have someone from the department ready to speak to that.
Okay. Is there somebody from the department who can confirm that you're at least in negotiations with stakeholders about trying to craft language that can put some of the testimony that they offered into the language so that it correlates better with the costs? Ms. Erber, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Carrie Erber, and I'm with Department of Human Services. Yes, we did meet on Friday to talk about this, and we talked about the stakeholders providing an amendment to reprice this to make it more restrictive and to make it more related to a service plan. So if they do provide that, we can relook at the fiscal note. And if they, if another fiscal note's requested. So
okay. So it's a work in progress.
Right.
And progress would be needed if we were going to be able to find room for this. Okay. Thank you for that clarification. And then the additional testifier, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hi, my name is Jonathan Bo Carlin. Most people call me Short. I was born in 1989, and I'm 26 years old. I was a member of the Miami Lions Zephyr track and football teams for 4 years. I earned a certificate in building, cleaning, and care, Northeastern Metro 916, and graduated from Transition Plus. in June of 2010. I represented the United States of America in the 2009 Special Olympics World Winter Games in Boise, Idaho, as one of the 5 advanced snowboarders on Team USA. I also competed in the 2015 S Games Aspen Unified Dual Slalom.
I'm Jody Carlin. I'm Bo's mom. Just try to keep up with him. Bo was born with Down syndrome and has been on a consumer-directed community support, or CDCS, waiver for several years. We used the waiver to purchase supports that help him be more independent. When he graduated from high school, his CDCS funding did not increase to pay for adult services. He would have to give up his CDCS to get more funding on a traditional waiver. That waiver would not pay for independent supports, only DT&H and group home services.
This is a big problem for me. I do not want to go to DT&H or living in a group home. That is not the kind of life I want. Plus, it's more expensive. Working around cars and trucks has been one of my dreams.
Bo used his personal network and custodial skills to get an independent job as an auto detailer in his community. He did not have additional money in his CDCS budget to pay for a job coach. After a long search, we were very lucky to finally find a VRS counselor willing to temporarily pay for a job coach for the initial month of training, just as we needed it. His ongoing support costs $400 per month and must come from his limited CDCS budget. And he is currently using more for help to advocate for increasing his hours. He has to give up other independent support to reallocate funds to cover these costs. Though paying a job coach is expensive for his CDCS waiver, DT&H would cost the state much more. He does not need that much service. CDCS allows him the flexibility to just the job coaching hours he needs to maintain his job.
I have a job so I can earn money to pay for my own things and pay taxes.
He has also decreased his SSI allocation. By using CDCS funds creatively for independent skills, he is lowering his need for future public funding. We are sharing this story to help you understand how the current funding rules could be altered to promote better outcomes, both for individuals and for the state budget. We urge you to support Senate File 1517 and other CDCS legislative efforts that will enable people with disabilities to tailor services to meet their individual needs and enable them to use funds more.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Mr. Carlin. You mentioned you pay taxes. Are you done with yours, or are you struggling with them the same way I'm struggling with mine, trying to meet Wednesday's deadline?
Yep.
Still struggling. Okay. Just like the rest of us. Senator Carlson, on the new language that we've heard about but haven't seen yet, just give us a, Mr. Pedersen, give us a timeline. Who's working on what? You know, we do need to get things priced out.
Yeah.
We're within a very limited number of days here before the budget bill is constructed.
I think we should be able to have it today. It's a matter of a couple of sentences that we're going to look over.
Okay.
And I'm and send to stakeholders and talk about, and should be able to get that hopefully today.
And you're working collaboratively with DHS, because I thought I heard Ms. Erber say they haven't actually seen the language yet. They're waiting on language.
Yep.
So just to
time is of the essence.
Let you know.
Right.
Get them the language.
Yeah, absolutely.
and share it with Mr. Monahan, fiscal counsel, so that Mr. Albrecht can, that our counsel and research and fiscal entities can all work and get behind it as well as we construct the bill. So with that, any questions of members? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to offer testimony either in support or opposition to Senate File 1517? Seeing none, Senator Carlson moves Senate File 1517 be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Budget Bill. On that motion, any further questions of members? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you, members.
Senator Carlson, you've got your epinephrine bill as well, Senate File 1580, is that correct?
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 1580 is a bill that will help prevent needless deaths from simple things that seem unthreatening to most of us. Peanuts, insect bites, even buttermilk pancakes. Just this past summer, a Bemidji teen died from eating pancakes that he thought was dairy-free but were not. He had forgotten his EpiPen and sadly died from a severe allergic reaction to dairy. Severe allergic reactions cause approximately 1,500 deaths annually, with children and adolescents at most risk. There are approximately 90,000 emergency department visits each year in the U.S. due to anaphylaxis. This bill builds on current Minnesota law that permits schools to maintain and use epinephrine auto-injectors for individuals believed to be suffering from anaphylaxis or an allergic reaction. It will allow additional entities to obtain epinephrine auto-injectors so that their trained staff may use them for individuals without a prescription if necessary. This is entirely voluntary for any authorized entity. If an organization wants to obtain epinephrine auto-injectors for this purpose, their employees must receive training that includes how to recognize signs and symptoms of severe allergic reactions and emergency follow-up procedures. The training organization will provide a certificate of training that can be provided to a pharmacy licensed as a wholesaler to purchase the epinephrine auto-injector to have it available in the event that an individual is believed to be experiencing an allergic reaction. Fiscal impact is from permissive authority for the Department of Health to identify additional categories of authorized entities in the future, as well as authorizing additional training organizations beyond what is currently permitted in the bill. It also allows the department to develop a common certificate of training that all trainers could use. All of this authority is permissive. We've been working with various stakeholders on the bill and are not aware of any opposition. I have one person here to testify in support of the bill, Ms. Nona Narvaez, Director of the Anaphylaxis and Food Allergy Association of Minnesota. Nona's son, Max, testified in previous committees, but he had to be in school this morning and couldn't be here to share his story. I offer to you, Ms. Nona Narvaez, for personal testimony.
Senator Carlson, would you like to first address your amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair, I believe we have the A4 amendment that has some changes requested by stakeholders. I don't think I have a copy of that amendment here. I believe
it's in the package.
In the package.
Mm-hmm. For
Members, would you care to explain the amendment?
Okay, the amendment, which is the A4 amendment, has two changes requested by stakeholders. It clarifies the duties of the Department of Health in lines 1.2 through 1.5, and 1.6 through 1.8 permits training to be conducted by a statewide group with the expertise in providing training on anaphylaxis and allergies, only if the training is under the supervision of board-certified allergy medical advisors. For example, this would permit the Anaphylaxis and Food Allergy Association of Minnesota to provide that training, something they currently do for food handlers in schools.
Any questions from members on the amendment? Senator Carlson moves the A4 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Motion carries. Amendment's adopted. Ms. Narvaez, would you state your name for the record?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Nona Narvaez. I serve as Executive Director for the Anaphylaxis and Food Allergy Association of Minnesota, AFA, and I've served in this capacity for nearly 13 years. My son, who's 16, has life-threatening food allergies to a number of things, and like Senator Carlson said, he had to be in school this morning, otherwise he'd be here sharing his personal story. But I have also witnessed anaphylactic reactions in public places, for example, Target Field, Mall of America, and this bill is the first step in allowing different entities, different venues to have non-patient-specific epinephrine on site for those unexpected emergencies. This bill starts small, and as the Department of Health becomes accustomed to it, it can allow other entities to have stock epinephrine. So our organization, which represents over 200,000 food allergic Minnesotans, endorses this bill. I'm available for any kind of questions. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Senator Carlson, is that the end of your testimony?
Mr. Chair, that is the end. I might also add something that was not mentioned, and that is that there are protections there for immunity for someone who does not act, and also for someone who does act to treat a person with a anaphylaxis episode.
Okay. Are there any questions of members? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to offer testimony either in support or opposition to Senate File 1580? Seeing none, Senator Carlson moves Senate File 1580 as amended be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Finance Bill. On that motion, any further questions? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Carlson. Senator Herr, Senate File 1889. Senator Herr, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I also like to thank Senator Carlson for giving me a good lead-in to the need of glasses due to ages. So I'm thankful that he mentioned that. Studies show that seniors over the age of 65 have some kind of visual impair. Researchers also tell us that when seniors begin to lose their vision, they often don't want to tell people of the loss. They tend to isolate themselves from and instead of seeking help. This bill, Senate File 1889, authorized the Commissioner of Human Services to establish a program that provides grants for in-home and community services for older adults with vision loss to help them live independently and longer. On the bill, Subdivision 1 specifies how grants must be distributed, and Subdivision 2 lists the eligibility requirements for organizations applying for the grants. And subdivision 3 specified the target population who is 65 or older and meet certain criteria. Subdivision 4 lists the service that may be provided by the organization receiving a grant. In the Health and Human Services Policy Committee hearing, a recommendation were made in regarding to reporting the outcomes and outreach to culturally diverse seniors. And Mr. Chair, I have an A2 amendment to address those recommendations.
Senator Herr moves the A2 amendment. It's not an author's amendment, so we'll have you describe it in this. I remember the conversation in HHS policy. These are pretty much policy items to follow up on some of that conversation. My understanding is there is no fiscal implication to this amendment. Is that correct? The fiscal note would remain as it is were we to adopt this amendment. Is that correct?
Not quite, Mr. Chair. I will make an oral amendment after we adapt this amendment here. I have spoke to fiscal.
Okay.
Fiscal analysts. So,
Mr. Monahan, maybe on this question.
Mr. Chair, the amendment shouldn't have any fiscal cost. The senator does intend to offer an oral amendment to the bill once the amendment is adopted.
And would that? Well, let's
no. Then that amendment is going to reflect. It is going to increase the appropriation slightly and also include the administrative costs that are already reflected in the fiscal note.
Okay. If it comes after this amendment, let's process this amendment first, which has no fiscal implication.
Yes.
So, and it is follow-up to conversations I do recall in HHS policy. So on the A2 amendment, did you describe it already, Senator Herr?
I could go over the top section, talk about the cultural appropriate outreach to diverse community, and the bottom part of subdivision 5 state the report of outcomes.
And it's a report that the grantees put together, so it would be incorporated in the grant funds. It wouldn't cost the general fund any additional money. Any questions on the A2 amendment? Senator Benson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Herr, I feel like we're getting redundant language. Can you just help me understand what you're doing here on the amendment, page 1, line 2? You're adding language to fund the provision of culturally specific programs to ethnic communities, but the sentence says, the commissioner shall take steps to ensure eligible organizations are made aware of the grant. What are we doing with the new language?
Senator Herr, or your testifier?
Senator Benson, you are correct. It does seem a little redundant, but perhaps this in this format, redundancy might be helpful. Let's see, on the line 1.2 on the amendment, it will delete page 1, line 14 on the bill, and it just adds some clarification to fund provision of culturally specific program to specific ethnic communities. Can you ask your question one more time?
Senator Benson?
Sure, Mr. Chair and Senator Herr, we're asking the commissioner to do outreach to eligible organizations and that they're encouraged to apply, and then we're telling them that they're going to have to use the grant to do culturally specific programs to specific ethnic communities. I just
okay.
It's not a big deal because it's accomplishing the same goal, I think. It seems like we don't need comfort language for something that you've already crafted into a bill. And so if there's something that we did in policy committee that's making you push harder on the outreach, I think you were very clear and you did a good job crafting in the first place. The report is just fine. I just am not sure. why the additional language when you did a pretty good job of pointing out that they need to do outreach to ethnic communities.
Okay, there's two.
Senator Herr, and maybe I can
Senator,
help.
Yes.
You know, part of this was some of my questioning as well. So on line of the bill, line 1, 13, and 14, takes steps to ensure eligible organizations serving ethnic communities are made aware of the grant and the request for proposals. My question was more around, are there eligible organizations out there that are serving culturally diverse communities? And so the strengthening here doesn't change any of the eligible organizations at all, and it does add somewhat comfort language, but I'm not sure it gets at the core question is, are there entities out there serving culturally diverse that are defined by the eligible organizations, or are we just putting lip service to culturally diverse services being offered? So if, you know, sometimes we have eligible organizations described in a manner in which it presupposes a grantee, basically, and if that grantee isn't doing the culturally specific programming and we don't change the eligible entities, then we can talk all we want about outreach to eligible entities, and we won't have achieved anything through the grant, I think, is one of the pieces that I'm still looking at here. So, Senator Herr.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, for explaining, and thank you, Senator Benson, for bringing that up. There's two components. One component is that we commission the commissioner to do an outreach for the grantees that will be applying for this, and this amendment on line 1.6 is to mandate grantee that they have to inform the seniors of diverse culture to be aware of their service.
So specifically, in the eligible organizations, have to have a demonstrated history of providing this service. They have to have the capacity to currently provide this service. They have to, again, currently provide the following list of services. And so if the intent is to get out to organizations that want to build capacity, it's not going to do that. So, I mean, if the existing entities really are equipped to do the culturally specific work, then that's fine. That's one thing. And the report would actually help us make sure that we at least get feedback as to whether we achieved anything. But I think the core question was, is this eligible entities, you know, crafted in a way to go to specific organizations that exist today? And if we were hoping to change that, we haven't. And so if the answer is, you know, today's organizations will do a good job with outreach and we're going to make them report back to us and demonstrate, that's one answer. But if we're actually trying to achieve helping some potential new organization to build capacity and be able to do that, we haven't done that. And I just need to say that publicly on the record and acknowledge that that's what's before us.
Yes,
so as not to have expectations and the realities out of sync after we put something in the statute books. That is never comfortable.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Herr. Is it okay?
Yep.
Any further questions of members? Seeing none, Senator Herr, you mentioned you have an
oral
amendment. Oral
amendment. I'd like to move this amendment to...
okay. First. It's oral, correct? So let's
so
have it.
Is this amendment adopted to this bill?
It hasn't been adopted.
We haven't adopted the A2. I'm ahead of myself. Any further questions on the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Okay. Now we are ready for your oral amendment.
Since this is a finance budget committee, I'd like to increase the dollar amount on my bill.
So on line 3.3, we're going to replace the 350 with
391,000.
And we're going to replace the 450 with 496.
That is correct.
And what that does is brings the bill in line with the fiscal note that we have before us. So there is no cost. The fiscal note was drafted with some of the admin costs. And additional grants. Mr. Albrecht, maybe you can describe what you're pointing to me there. I'm not...
Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that Senator Hur wants to increase the grant amount in the bill from $350,000 to $360,000 in the first year and from $450,000 to $460,000 in the second year.
But that is what is reflected in the fiscal note that we have before us. Is that correct or not correct?
Mr. Chair, no, that's not correct. That's why I wrote additional grants.
Okay. So,
Mr. Chair, I believe that the fiscal note would still accommodate that amount of money within the administrative resources that are on the fiscal note.
So, with that amendment, we're out of sync with the fiscal note by $10,000 in 16 and $10,000 in 17 for additional grants, and that would be the difference in your... Okay. Amendment. Any questions on the oral amendment, Senator Benson? Oh, it looked like you had your eyebrows scrunched up, and
no.
That usually precedes a
I'm
finger.
I'm sorry. I've done that to you, Mr. Chair.
Any questions on the oral amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. So on the bill, as amended, and fiscal note in front of us, any further questions of members? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to offer testimony either in support or opposition to Senate File 1889?
Mr. Chair, we're...
Senator Hur.
Thank you for working this bill with me, and I do have a testifier here, Ms. Kate Grathwaith is here to from Vision Loss Resource that will be testify on this matters.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Kate Grathwall, and I want to thank you very much for moving this bill along into our to the next to hopefully be a part of the omnibus bill. Just briefly, the bill is to help the growing numbers of seniors who are living in their homes with vision loss receive services where they are so that we can help them age in place, live as independently as possible. To the question of outreach to specific ethnic groups, both organizations that might apply for this grant do that, and with more specific language will help us encourage further growth into serving those more specific cultural populations. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you. Senator Brown?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Hur, I do have a question for you on the meaning of a phrase. It's in the A2 Amendment, line 1.7. It's the disenfranchised communities. I tried to Google that real quickly, and the only thing I'm coming up with is those people who are denied the right to vote. Does it mean something beyond that?
Senator Hur?
My understanding will be the community that are not connected to the link of information that we provide. Perhaps it meant some general something else, but that's my understanding. If that's not, I'd like to advise from the council if that's not
Mr.
the
Monahan,
right.
Mr. Monahan, do you have
right
insight into where the disenfranchised communities language came from? It's
Mr. Chair, I don't.
Okay, Senator Hayden gave us priority populations is what we're working with last week, we learned. So maybe, so we can continue this. It's a good question. We should be consistent and have definitions for what we put in the statute and understand what it is we're working toward. So we can continue this conversation probably offline, but trying to stick something in at this point unless you wish.
No, okay. I didn't know if council, Mr. Chair, had, if it was in statute somewhere, but apparently it's not. So, okay.
We'll work on that a little bit and see, you know, if we take it off the table, what the proper phraseology should be to get at what we're trying to accomplish here. Any further questions of members? Seeing none, again, I'll ask if there's anyone else in the audience who wishes to offer testimony either in support or opposition to Senate File 1889. Seeing none, Senator Herr moves that Senate File 1889, as amended, be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Budget Bill. On that motion, any further questions of members? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Herr.
Thank you. Thank you, community members and chair.
Next, we have Senator Hoffman, Senate File 567.
Mr. Chair and members,
Senator
thank
Hoffman,
you.
Senator Hoffman, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 567 is a modification regarding automatic drug distribution systems. With me at the table is Jessica Androff, and I believe Ani Simon is also going to be joining us as well. But Senate File 567 really contains the needed technical updates regarding the use of the automatic drug distribution systems. In recent years, legislation has enacted or was enacted to allow the use of the automatic drug distribution systems in nursing homes. And since then, the use of these machines has grown due to the increased cost savings, safety, and efficiency that results from their use. This bill addresses three issues, Mr. Chair. First, the bill would make it more appealing for over-the-counter medications to be dispersed through the automatic drug distribution system through medical assistance. Second, it would allow allow automated drug distribution systems to be used in certain boarding care homes where they are not currently allowed. And finally, it allows the accuracy of the containers used in an automatic drug dispensing system to be verified by the FDA-registered repacker. My own personal note there, Tom Pollock in Coon Rapids, they have a system in their care facility, and it's just it was amazing. It was an amazing, eye-opening experience for me and how this has broad-based potential for the statewide. So with that, Mr. Chair, I turn it over to Jessica Androff.
And you missed one of your key points. It saves money.
Mr. Chair, let's move this bill.
Come on, Hoffman, get with it. It saves money, $2,000 a year. I mean, it's, you know.
Mr. Chair, thank you. It absolutely puts us in the right direction.
All
the
right.
Fiscal note shows a saving. So you should just, like, automatically move this right now.
But you said you have a testifier.
I
so
do
welcome
have.
To the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jessica Androff. I'm Director of Pharmacy Operations at Merwin LTC Pharmacy. As Senator Hoffman explained, the main change in this bill has to do with state regulations around dosage amounts of over-the-counter medications that medical assistance will cover. As currently written, 256B statutorily requires pharmacies to dispense over-the-counter medications that are being reimbursed by Medicaid in a quantity that is the lower of the number of dosage units contained in the manufacturer's original package, so a full bottle quantity, and the number of dosage units required to complete the patient's course of therapy. In recent years, automated drug distribution systems have been approved for use in Minnesota. These machines dispense medications on a dose-by-dose basis. These systems have been proven nationally to save money due to the patient only receiving the doses used. No additional medications are on hand for destruction when a patient expires or a medication is discontinued. The payer is only charged for the doses used. While the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services has put a mechanism in place nationally to allow for this, Medicaid is still bound by the statutory requirements in 256B when it comes to over-the-counter medications. By making the changes proposed, pharmacies would be allowed to be reimbursed by Medicaid for only the doses used in this system. Additionally, pharmacies would not have to treat patients on Medicaid differently than other patients solely based on the reimbursement structure. All patients and payers can receive the benefits of dose-by-dose dispensing. By reducing the dispensing fee for pharmacies dispensing over-the-counter medications in less than full bottle quantities using these systems, Minnesota Department of Health and Human Services will be at a minimum fiscally neutral in cases where a standard dispense fee would have been paid for a larger quantity of medication. Lastly, there are two other changes made in the bill. The first would allow automated drug distribution systems to be used in certain boarding care homes where they are not currently allowed, and the second allows the accuracy of the containers used in an automated drug distribution system to be verified by an FDA-registered repackager. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Hoffman, did you have an additional testifier? Or is
Mr. Chair, no. Ms. Simons would be available if needed, but we're good.
Stand
Thank
for
you.
Questions. Any questions of members? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to offer testimony either in support or opposition to Senate File 567? Seeing none, Senator Sharon, move Senate File 567. Be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Finance Bill. On that motion, any further questions? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Hoffman, and you have another one.
I do, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you. With me at the table will be Ann Henry and Ani Simons. So,
okay.
Mr. Chair and members, Senate File 543, first of all, it is the MA income and asset limit increases, and originally we started at 133% of federal poverty, but seeing that we wanted to get as much information out in front of Mr. Chair, I'm going to present to you the A2 amendment, which has two changes.
And you have an A3 amendment as well that... we have two fiscal notes in our packet, and maybe you should explain that to members.
Correct.
It appears to me the A3 amendment would have, it'd be the one that is the full, fully loaded, going to 133%. And
I don't have the A3 amendment in front of me, but I do know the
we
two.
We have the fiscal note in front of us, and it's $332 million.
Correct.
So I mean, I'm guessing that's the fully loaded.
That is the fully loaded, that's the 100%. Here, I got my note. Three versions that we were originally going to bring at one time in this, and this one is the fully loaded full bill. It's the full equity for people with disabilities and elderly waivered services, and that's the one where we said, well, let's really work on something this year. And so the amendment then is to go from 133 down to 100% in front of you. The two fiscal notes, one shows it should be the spend down side of it, and the other one is the asset limitation side of it. So
we're not going to try to move the A3 amendment.
That is correct,
members
Mr.
have
Chair.
It here. I mean, members can have it. It just has to do with changing the dates, and members can also have the fiscal note associated with the fully loaded, just so that we kind of have the context about what we're talking about. But I guess you're not planning on moving the A3 amendment and asking us to move the A3 amendment.
Correct, so, Mr. Chair and members, just to let you know that the A3 amendment is just the date change, which is held held consistent in the A2 amendment from July 1st of 2015 to February 1st of 2016. So we're good.
And so we're going to then actually pass out the A2 amendment.
Yep.
And that's the one you'd like somebody to offer, and we can have our discussion based
on the
that.
A2 amendment.
Senator Sharon moves the A2 amendment. On the amendment, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a fix. You remember the big piece that you have. You should have in front of you a couple of pieces of literature that's handed out. One is called the Faces of Disability, which the Consortium of Citizens with Disabilities has. And then that's it. That's all I have for you on that one.
So the A2 removes the asset limit piece. It removes the income limit piece, and it retains the excess income standard, the spend down. So we're what we have before us, if we adopt the A2, is the attempt to start buying up the spend down from its current 75% to 100%.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Effective February 1st of
2016. Yep.
So that members can kind of track. Okay, thank you. This is helpful. Senator Hoffman. And then you have some testifiers, it appears?
I do. Mr. Chair, you did a great job explaining exactly my opening remarks. So
I'm going to
turn it. But I do want to, one of the things that I do want to talk about throughout this is an addition of Senate File 566, but I will bring that up at the end of the testimony of Ann Henry and Ani Simon. So.
Okay. Who's going to start? Ms. Henry, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Ann Henry, and I'm with the Disability Law Center at Legal Aid. And we thank Senator Hoffman for championing this issue again this session. We really urge that action be taken to move those folks at 75% of the poverty up. People with disabilities and low-income seniors are at the very bottom of the Medicaid program. Everybody else, every other group, is at 133%. We know that it's a heavy lift to get all the way to equity in 1 year, and so we really appreciate the effort to move the bottom 75% up to 100. And one point, and when Ms. Simons testifies, you'll get a little more information about it. The cost, the state cost of doing this is about $24.5 million, partly because the effective date is delayed because of system issues. But that amount of money really is to be doubled when you think about the health coverage it will buy, because the federal government will match what our state pays. And so what this is going to mean for people is, instead of having to incur those bills with their Social Security down to 75% of the poverty level, they will get their health care covered starting at 100% and leave them with more of their Social Security income to live on. So we really urge this. The problem was last dealt with in 2001 when we went from 70% to 75%. So it really does need attention at this point. It's not going to go away, and with the aging population, we don't think it's going to get any easier. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Henry. So, I mean, it really does amount to money in the pockets of very low-income disabled individuals across Minnesota. Yeah. Yes. Ms. Simons, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you very much, Chair Lori and committee members. My name is Ani Simons, and I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Home Care Association. And I wanted to just testify very briefly about language that was moving forward in Senate File 566, which Senator Hoffman just referenced.
We should adopt the A2, and finish this discussion, and then I think that's a different discussion. Am I correct?
Mr. Chair and members, it's interrelated, but yeah, I want to make sure for public record that once again you hear what that causal has an effect on trying to move systems forward. But I will follow your lead on that, and let's finish the A2.
Let's
close this up, and then I just wanted to have talk about how the spend down stuff
seconds,
is all
Senator Benson.
Discombobulated. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Why are we changing the effective date? Was that addressed? I don't know if I recall why we're changing. Is that this isn't an IT thing? Is it a policy?
It actually is an IT
thing. Okay.
Senator Rosen, you also had a question?
No, thank you.
Okay. So, on the A2 amendment, any further testimony on the A2 amendment, Senator Hoffman? Members should understand that this is moved reluctantly. Everybody would like to make significantly more progress, but we needed to have something that was within the realm of something that might fit into a target this year. So any questions of members? Senator Rosen?
I'll move the A2, please.
Okay. Senator Rosen renews Senator Sharon's motion on the A2 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails. Now, Senator Hoffman, you had another. Did you wish to introduce it in the form of an amendment or just a discussion about other components that aren't?
I just want to thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I want to bring it as a discussion point because it is interrelated to the MA spend down, and it has to deal with what Senator Benson kind of made related to is it an IT technology thing? And so,
yeah.
And with that, I wanted to give Ms. Simon just 30 seconds of your time
fine.
I was going to bring this as an amendment and open this up, but since you guys don't want to be here till midnight tonight, I promise to just allow this is what I came up 2 days ago with to Senator Lori. So, and it is the collection of spend down payments from individuals on MA is the responsibility shift. And because of that, it created some problems within the system that after I spoke with the IT folks and with the DHS, I understood how we ranked prioritize-wise. But still, the system problems are still out there, Senator Lurie and Senator Benson, and everybody's shaking their head around the table. And I just wanted to make sure I get 30 seconds to just spell it out.
Ms. Simons, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Chair Lurie, committee members. My name is Ani Simons. I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Home Care Association and just going to discuss briefly language related to this broader issue that was moving forward in Senate File 566, but that due to technical and IT issues at DHS, we were unable to get a fiscal note for. But the language in Senate File 566 was addressing a piece of this broader issue around the spend down, and that's the fact that when a provider provides services to someone on MA and that individual has a spend down, the provider bills the state for the service, and the state pays the provider only for claims that are above the spend down amount and then instructs the provider to collect the remaining reimbursement for the services from the individual as reimbursement for that service. But as Ms. Henry and Senator Hoffman have mentioned multiple times, and you're all aware, because the income levels that Minnesotans with disabilities are subject to are so low in order to access medical assistance, they often simply can't or are unable to reimburse the provider with that spend down payment for the service provided. So we have this state policy where providers are responsible for collecting the spend down payment from individuals they serve, and it really puts providers in a situation where they have to be in the collections business and can't focus exclusively on providing the best service possible. And it also, frankly, results in providers having a high amount of uncollected spend down payments each year, at the end of each year, for services they provided. So the language in Senate File 566 would have instructed the Department of Human Services to reimburse providers for the services provided, and then the department and the state would have been responsible for going forward and collecting the spend down payment from the individuals. That would have been one way to help providers be reimbursed for the MA services they provide. However, the Minnesota Home Care Association is in strong support of Senate File 543 as another means of addressing this issue, because by raising the amount of money that individuals with disabilities are allowed to have each month, it would help increase the amount that providers are able to be reimbursed for the services they provide, and it would support Minnesotans with disabilities to live much more independently in the community, which is absolutely a shared goal we all have. So thank you for the opportunity to talk briefly about the language moving forward in that bill.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I just wanted to point out again that there were some letters also from AARP, NAMI Minnesota, and the Assasset Building Coalition, as well as the Minnesota Association of Senior Nutrition Services, just for you guys to peruse as well. But with that, and my and our conclusion, and we would hope that you would roll over 543 into your omnibus bill, and we can start making good things happen in Minnesota again.
Any questions of members? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to offer testimony either in support or opposition to Senate File 543? Seeing none, on a closing note, I would like to thank you, Senator Hoffman, for your continued advocacy on behalf of folks with disabilities across the state of Minnesota. And Senator Rosen moves Senate File 543 as amended be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the HHS Omnibus Finance Bill. On that motion, any further questions? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you very much. Happy Monday.
Senator Rosen, Senate File 176. Okay. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Mr. Chair, we have members. We have Senate File 176, which develops a new certification. Excuse me, for community ed. Can I start over?
Sure. you found your glasses.
It's the first time I've heard myself.
You can't blame that.
And I was hoping these were my glasses, but they're not. So we've got some problems here. Okay, so it develops a certification for a community medical response emergency medical technician, or a CMT. This certification is designed to fill gaps in timely essential follow-up after a patient discharge from a hospital.
There's actually been some very successful ongoing pilot programs within the metro and the 7th County area also. Mr. Chair, I have the A5 amendment that I'd like to move, please.
Senator Rosen moves the A5 amendment. It's being handed out right now.
I'll explain the A5, Mr.
Please
Chair.
Do.
Yes, it's just a little clarification on some things, but also on line 4, it is actually your language that you requested to do to target some culturally appropriate care. And also on page 19 in the stakeholders group for the MA reimbursement, we are deleting care coordination and diagnosis-related patient education, which is a compromise from the stakeholder groups. I personally would like to see some of that language stay back in, but it is a compromise that came together actually just yesterday. With that, ongoing, there has been just the fiscal note, as you can see, I think is fairly reasonable. It basically just deals, that's what I'm thinking anyway. Basically deals with some for the emergency medical board, the licensing, getting the licensing and the education system up and running, and it's also the approval and inspection of the education programs is basically what the fiscal note deals with. There has been at least, I'd like to say, probably 5 meetings since this bill was introduced back in January 8th. The stakeholders included the fire service, the licensed practical nurses, the home health care providers, the APRNs, and the department. In Section 1 and 2, it creates a definition of the CMT and defines their scope of practice, specifying their certification standards, their education and training. And in Section 4, requires DHS, in consultation with the stakeholders, to determine the payment rates and coverage requirements for a CMT with MA, with medical assistance. The commissioner also shall consider the potential hospital admittance and emergency room utilization reductions, as well as increased access to quality care in the rural communities, and report back to the legislature on these covered services by February 15th of 2016. If legislation is enacted for MA coverage, DHS shall evaluate the effect of MA and Minnesota Care coverage for these services on the cost and quality of care under these programs, and that finding must be given to the legislature by December 1st of 2017, a year later. Some of the issues have been over the scope of practice, and I'd just like to go to the bill, Mr. Chair and members, and specifically point out a couple things that I think are very, very strong case and very tightly defines the role of the CMT, and that is on page 2, paragraph F on line 30. A CMT may not provide services as defined in 144A.471, subdivision 6 and 7. And that clearly defines what a person can and cannot do. And I could go through that whole statute if you'd like, but well, thank you. But it just says in line 32 and 34, they can help provide verbal and visual reminders to the patient to take regular scheduled medication, but not to provide or bring the patient medication. And number 2, follow regularly scheduled treatment or exercise plans. The reason I bring this forward and point this out, members, is that there has been great discussion about the breadth of this bill and is it overreaching and stepping into some of the concerns of the Board of Nursing. And I think if we went through this statute and looked at what is being proposed, it clearly defines what these people are supposed to do. And I think this is all part of the care coordination, the vision that we have for Minnesota ongoing. Also, another issue was
partially addressed by the A5, I think, correct?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Maybe we should Senator Rosen moved the A5 amendment. I do think it was described. Senator Benson, a question on the A5?
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Rosen, to the A5 amendment on the amendment, page 1, line 4, to be eligible for certification, there's a long list. Successfully complete a training program that includes training in providing culturally appropriate care. Is there capacity for that? You're on your A5 amendment, mm-hmm. line 4, mm-hmm. we're inserting an additional requirement for culturally appropriate training or culturally appropriate care. Is there capacity for
to
that?
Incorporate or, that training and to incorporate that requirement.
Right. Is there already an existing program so that, because if we're setting this up and nothing exists to provide culturally appropriate training for this category, then we're never going to get anybody certified. It's right. interesting to make the request. It's another thing if it's actually available. Is it included in the college and university programs with clinical experience?
Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, that is the essence of the fiscal note, is to develop a program.
Okay.
And I believe that to get it certified, to get it up and running in the curriculum, actually this was a very strong issue by Mr. Chair to bring this forward for areas that need to have this continued care coordination or continuum of care, and I think it fits very well actually into the rural area. But
yes,
unfortunately, these pilot programs are just in the metro at this point.
Today. We're hoping they grow.
That's right.
And by building this curriculum in a way that addresses the cultural competencies on the front end, and it can be incorporated into the fiscal piece of building the curriculum, as Senator Rosen mentioned, we've got a real issue across the state, both in rural and in metro, truthfully, where it's been very difficult to encourage folks from priority populations or ethnic communities to get on the career track toward anywhere from first responders up to paramedics and making sure that we build cultural competencies into the curriculum at the front end is one way to try to address that. We don't know exactly how, but I think that if we fail to continually make sure that we've built those into the curriculum, we won't be on a path to getting to where we need to be. And so it started with trying to be able to get people on this career path that could really help their communities. And this is one way to just make sure, and it serves other goals as well, making sure that those cultural competencies are built into the curriculum. Senator Benson, do you have additional questions?
Mr. Chair and Senator Rosen, maybe it was incorporated in point number 4 on page 2, line 9. But I don't see it included there, and if it's not part of their current program, you're right, elevating it is fine. I don't want this program slowed down because
right.
there isn't something in place. So if it's already been discussed as part of an ongoing curriculum, I have no problem.
Mr. Chair, members, Buck McAlpin, Minnesota Ambulance Association. Senator Benson, to that question, a couple different programs. Our current community paramedic program that we've had for about 4 years now, the curriculum, we've just went through the third version of it, and we keep changing it as we find the populations change, what we focus on, and a big piece of it is a cultural specific piece. And secondly, they are just finishing up the community EMT curriculum for Senator Rosen's bill. And there's also a school called Teeks out of Texas, a big fire EMS academy that's doing the exact same thing. So we are ahead of that, recognizing that, because our population is very diverse, we take care of. And we're especially in rural Minnesota, we're starting to see that too, as Senator Laurie commented on.
And Mr. Chair,
Senator
also, to that, as Mr. McAlpin mentioned, the community paramedic, which actually took 2 years to pass. The first year was this piece. The second year was the MA reimbursement. But it passed unanimous on the floor both of those years. And it's been extremely successful. And actually, I thought it would be used more perhaps in the rural area. They are knocking it out of the ballpark in the metro with that program. So I'm excited about that. And also, I just want to point out on paragraph D on page 2.21, that also really clearly defines what's going on. There was some discussion about that paragraph, episodic, what does that mean? But we did work that out with the stakeholders. So I'm just pointing out some of the areas that did cause some rub But once we continue the discussion, and I would like to thank all the stakeholders. I believe the M&A, perhaps, if they would like to come up and testify, they may not be jumping up and down. However, I believe the bill is where it sits, where everybody can be comfortable. They may not say it, they're comfortable. They may want to continue the work next year, and I welcome that work going forward. But I think it's tightly crafted now. It supports the continuum of care model that we have, we really embrace around here, and I'm excited to get this up and rolling. With that, I don't know if Mr. McAlpin has anything else. I have no other testifiers. Yeah.
So you move the A5 amendment?
I move the A5.
On the A5 amendment. We're trying to wrap up here. Any further questions? Seeing none. Did anybody from the audience wish to testify on the A5 amendment? We will have testimony on the bill as well. Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails.
And Mr. Chair, I do have
Senator
the
Rosen, you
I
have
do
the
have
A6 amendment
I do.
As well.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
And I hope everyone has that.
It's being passed out right now.
Okay. That is a creation
yep.
that... I'm not even sure Mr. McAlpin has seen this yet, but it is. this would have no fiscal impact. The department can come up and testify that on this. I've been talking with the department over the last several months about something in this realm of having, and I've worked with the stakeholders, and they're excited about exploring this, where you use a CMT to go in and be an extra tool for child protection. Probably start off next year with a couple pilot programs, perhaps two in the city, one in the rural area. And they, as you know, CMTs, firemen have an extra special relationship in their community, are able to get into individuals' homes, people that perhaps are under the child protection system, and they would be, again, somebody that can add that added set of eyes to make sure that the services are being provided, that they're taking care or they're taking advantage of the services, and that everything is up and running. When you have a social worker come to the door, when you have a police officer come to the door, it sets everybody up at a different level. When a fireman comes to the door or an EMT, it's a different set of rules. So this is just a project that we've been thinking about, and I've talked with the commissioner about it. I've talked with the departments, the folks on the Task Force for Child Endangerment, of course, Senator Sharon, and the other two, Representative Mulry and Kersha, and we all think this has got great potential. So it's just a thought of mine. I hope you guys will. I hope you senators will accept this thought and just see if we can continue the wonderful work that the emergency medical
and fiscal staff has shown me an email where the department did confirm there are no costs to the A6. So that's good enough for me. We wouldn't have to adjust the fiscal note. We do have an oral amendment where the recommendation goes to the legislature. It needs to go to the chairs. Ms. White, if you want to tell us exactly how that oral amendment would be incorporated into the A6.
Mr. Chair and members, I was going to delete legislature on 1.13 and have the report go to the members of the legislative committees having jurisdiction over CEMT and child protection issues.
Senator Rosen incorporates that oral amendment into her A6 amendment. Any questions on the A6 amendment? Senator Benson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rosen, I'm pretty sure I'm going to like this idea. I just haven't heard you talk about it at all with all the child protection stuff that's going on, or if you did, I missed it. Is there another place that we could put this so that I can spend a little time with you in conversation? I'm fine if we put it here. I'm just thinking about a police officer knocking on the door versus a firefighter. Would all those things be addressed by the department as they're developing this project? Sometimes there are safety concerns and a child protection issue, and are we expecting our CMTs to walk into what could be a domestic situation? There are I don't think it's a bad idea. I just have an aura of questions. And so I'm not going to oppose it. I just need them cleared up before this gets to the floor.
We had that testimony from former Senator Harrington the other day about police officers walking in on a really awful domestic situation, and CEMTs, are we asking them to expose themselves in that way? That's a good question.
Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, actually, I did mention this in the policy about the potential of something dealing with child protection. We have talked about it in the subgroups. Perhaps I haven't talked about it publicly because it is a thought, and it just took a while for the department to come up with some language. But knowing that there are some culturally sensitive issues, I thought that using the community paramedic or the CMT model to bridge that gap, and actually many people from North Minneapolis have come testified that that's perhaps a mechanism or vehicle to help bridge that gap in those culturally sensitive areas where law enforcement cannot bridge that at this point. A firefighter can, or emergency medical folk can do that. And so with that, I do have Mr. Chris Parsons that was involved in the original meetings when we talked about this thought. I've had some meetings on this idea, and it's just taken a while to get it.
Mr. Parsons, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Throw him in here.
No problem. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Chris Parsons. I'm president of the Minnesota Professional Firefighters. We represent over 40 professional firefighter organizations throughout the state. Senator Benson, in answer to your question, the way that we conceptualize this program is not to throw firefighters or community EMTs into a domestic situation. They wouldn't be answering an emergency call that, you know, a police officer would be asked to answer. This would be a scheduled visit, similar to where you would have a county caseworker going into a home. Community EMTs right now in our pilot program are working in teams of two, and it's not out of line with our role as emergency responders or as community EMT responders. I'm 15 years on the St. Paul Fire Department. I spent most of those years working on a ambulance crew, this is no more dangerous than answering a door or going to a door at 2 o'clock in the morning, not necessarily knowing what's on the other side. So safety is our number one issue for my organization, and we'll make sure we're not putting anybody in harm's way.
Thank you, Mr. Parsons. Any other questions on the A6 amendment? Seeing none, Senator Rosen moves the A6 amendment as orally amended. On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails. So now we have the bill in shape, correct, Senator Rosen? And we
yes,
have the
sir.
Right fiscal note in front of us. Any further testimony? Any questions of members? Senator Hayden.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Rosen, I just want to say thank you for bringing this forward. You have done a tremendous amount of work to try to work with all of the stakeholders to figure out how we can move this proposal forward. I actually think it is going to be extremely helpful. I do want to just point out a couple of things. I think the continued look at the culturally specific and appropriate training, I want to applaud you, and I know this committee has dealt with this a lot, and I in particular have talked about it, and it feels like we're now starting to embed this in the work that we do, as opposed to it being kind of a one-off. And so thank you so much for that. And then also the creative notion around the child protection. I know that you and Senator Sharon have really worked hard at this, and listening to the stakeholders in the child protection system at trying to figure out how do we keep our kids safe, and by inserting the folks that would be EMTs, which a lot of times are firefighters, they do have a much different persona just, and this isn't to demean any law enforcement officer, but they typically come to the door for two different reasons. And so I think that as you guys work this out, this is going to be very helpful in ensuring that our children are safe and well taken care of. So I just wanted to applaud you for all the great work that you've done on this bill.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Haven. That means a lot, but actually you are the one that started a lot of this work, and so I'm just trying to hang on to your coattails, as usual. So.
Looks like we have a testifier. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is John Tolleson. I'm with the Minnesota Nurses Association, and we've been working with the author and the stakeholders throughout this process, and I just wanted to thank Senator Rosen and other stakeholders for the work that they've done on the bill to address several of our concerns, which are around the vague language and sort of the broad authorization. And so we've received assurances that the services that will be assigned to community EMTs will not be nursing services, and so we'll put our trust in the process. And I know the bill will come back for MA reimbursement authorization in a year. So we'll just work with everyone throughout that process. And so thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Tolleson. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to offer testimony either in support or opposition to Senate File 176? Seeing none, any further questions of members? Seeing none, Senator Rosen, move Senate File 176 as amended be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Budget Bill. On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you very much, Mr. Members. Thank you.
That concludes our bills for today. A couple of announcements. There are no hearings tonight because we got done on time. We do have a longer list of bills tomorrow and Wednesday. Be ready for evening hearings and watch for notices about time updates as well. The evening hearings are starting a little bit late, but that's because of trouble securing a room. And rooms might become available. We might be able to start as early as 6 for the evening hearing. So please stay tuned and watch the notices. We'll do our very best to reach out to particularly members and make sure that authors are aware if we're able to bump up the times. But I think that'll make us more efficient and effective. And we did say we're going to be a little bit fluid this week as we try to work through a long list of bills. So thank you for your time and attention. We stand adjourned. Senator, we don't stand adjourned. Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, it's still Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, because I think that it is still posted for Friday.
We have, we are canceling the Friday hearing announcement. We tried to have some placeholders to make sure that if we needed a room, we had one. The rooms have been gobbled up. We have 3 committee rooms, and you need to make sure you get your dibs on them. Senator Rosen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what is the time frame as far as when does this bill have to be out of this committee?
I'm planning on, having Wednesday our last hearing.
Okay.
I think that I'm going to be able to have the weekend before unveiling the bill. And so I'm shooting for Monday, but that is subject to change. That is not a public, that is not an announcement from leadership just yet, and I need to do what I'm told. I'm hopeful that I will have Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday to finish constructing the bill, pick up everything off the table I possibly can. We have a lot of really good ideas over $1 billion. Yeah, about $1 billion worth of good ideas to fit into $341 million. So it's a lot of work, and we'll stay tuned. Thank you, members. Now we stand adjourned.